Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Crossland, Corsa and Mokka. Three good reasons to visit the Opel Open Road event.
Looking for a what? What is it? Looking for a home to last.
We're talking about 14 songs we hope to get. I've got a feeling.
How many have we already recorded good enough?
No.
Just say whatever comes in the head each time. Attracts me like a cauliflower until you get the word.
The best bit of us always has been and always will be is when we're backs against the wall.
But it's going to be such a comical thing, like in 50 years' time. They broke up because Yoko sat on an end.
57 hours of video, 100 hours of audio recorded over 21 days in January 1969. Well, today, after being locked away for 52 years, that unseen footage will be brought to our screens as part of the new Disney Plus series, The Beatles Get Back. It's a three-part documentary directed and produced by Peter Jackson. It captures the band during intimate recording sessions in the months before they split. Well, joining me now to talk more about the series, we have 2FM broadcaster and DJ and all-round Beatles expert Dave Fanning. And in our Cork studio, Beatles superfan Jim O'Mahony. You're both very welcome. Thank you for being with us. Dave, you're one of the special people in that you have seen this, all three episodes.
Actually, I've only seen about 5 hours, but that's enough for the moment. I'm going to get the rest of it tonight. Yeah, I've seen a lot of it. And if you're a fan of the Beatles, it's just remarkable to think that you can actually be brought back in time and sit there as the people that you've admired most in your life are doing the work that they do and creating something. Not necessarily their greatest album, definitely not, but that's not the point. And it's just like, it's like Leonardo da Vinci, when he slapped a bit of paint on a church. Imagine sitting there watching that, or Beethoven doing number 5 or whatever. They're like, you're looking there, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it is a little bit eerie listening to that recording.
Wait till you see it, the pictures are so good. What Peter Jackson has done, he's done this new kind of technique you can do now in 2021 or the last few years. He spent a lot of time doing it. He did it with a movie about the First World War recently, and he's done it now again, and it's just brilliant.
Will you tell us what was going on with the Beatles when this was being recorded?
Well, what was going on with the Beatles was, this is January 1969, and they kind of officially broke up probably by about March, 15 months later. And 1969 was the worst year in the life of the Beatles. A lot of things were going on that weren't very good. They were getting on fine. They knew how to create. They could sit around and make some music. But there were certain things that were getting in the way, mostly the business. And business things made them fall apart by the end of the year, really. In fact, they were all kind of falling apart here. You can see a lot of it. Even though later, after this, they recorded another album called Abbey Road, which many people think is the best they've ever made. I certainly don't. But I mean, the point is they were actually able to do that, even though you can see them falling apart here, because this album, Let It Be, was kind of put aside and was released after Abbey Road. So it's a funny thing on that level too. But just four guys sitting around, the most famous people in the world, who had done everything you could do. If you think of the first few albums, and then kind of, you know, A Hard Day's Night and Help. And then after that came the two biggest ones, Rubber Soul and Revolver. And then they took time off and gave it all up and didn't do any gigs. And they brought out a thing called Sgt. Pepper. How do you beat all that?
You say you can see it falling apart, I mean, are the personal relationships falling apart on the screen?
Bluntly, yeah, they are. I mean, they're getting on great, but there is a thing like you know, Brian Epstein died in 67. He was the manager. He wasn't necessarily controlling all parts of their lives, but he was the one they would go to. Once he died, they were kind of falling apart anyway.
Okay.
So this is 2 years later, or nearly 2 years later, and they're there. Like, Paul is doing his very best, not to be the leader, but just to get some kind of cohesion on the whole thing. And he wasn't trying to stamp on everybody else. But, you know, and George was just kind of a bit of a curmudgeon, given out about the fact that his songs weren't on albums. And Ringo was just doing what he's doing. But the elephant in the room, no question about it, is John Lennon here. Because it's twofold, and it's a terrible thing in some ways. Number one, there's five people sitting there all the time, and that fifth person is Yoko. A lot of people saying, but she doesn't get in the way, and a lot of people are viewing this and saying it's okay. It's terrible. It's absolutely
awful.
Tell
me now,
what is that idiot doing there? It's just awful. It's just, she's completely and absolutely in the way. Like, if four women went out to work together, they wouldn't bring one husband with them. And it's just ludicrous. And also, the main thing is, and everybody knows this, and it's been well documented, the real elephant in the room is heroin. John Lennon was on heroin at the time. It's as simple as that. And he never really, he spent 5 or 6 years, still much later, even when he was in New York by himself, a long time going through cold turkey, trying to get off it, getting on it, getting up. And it was all Yoko. And Yoko will admit that. She was the one who was basically dealing. You know, and like, you know, you can see him in this. He doesn't really do an awful lot in terms of trying to kind of get involved. And Paul is doing the best he can to keep the thing going.
Okay, gosh, it's fascinating stuff. And Jim, for you, and we've spoken before. I know you're a super fan.
Yeah.
Do you agree with what Dave is saying there, that there was a big shift in the dynamic amongst the lads when this was being recorded, 1969?
Oh, completely. There was. I mean, if you look, like, John was going through a lot of, he was going through a lot of stuff. Heroin played a huge part in it. I mean, he wasn't creating. He didn't have the correct quota of songs for the record that he normally would have had. I mean, if you've seen the original movie, which I thought was, it's very, very depressing to watch, but it's a fascinating, honest account of a band breaking up. I mean, none of them want to be there, and Paul is desperately trying to make the best out of a bad situation, but just everything, the body language and everything, is just so bad. But John is the one that really wants out. And I mean, like, Yoko gets an awful lot of stick, and I mean, I would agree completely with what Dave said. I mean, if you've got four guys in a band in a studio, you don't bring your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your partner or whatever in. And John did, and I think John probably knew that that would antagonise the others, but I think he was looking for the exit door at that stage anyway, and he didn't care.
Oh, he was needling the rest of them by having her there.
I would think so, a little bit, yeah.
Would you agree, Dave, that it was intentional?
Very possibly, yeah. I think it probably was. But John was like a bit of a lapdog with Yoko. He wasn't really in control of his life. But John had a terribly rough... I'll tell you a perfect example. You always hear about people who get bullied at school. John would admit he was the bully. He's all his life, he was not a particularly nice person, never was a good person. He was always... I'll tell you, you know when four guys are together and they go out and they josh together and they're kind of, you know, slagging each other and having a bit of a laugh, and that's how they get on, kind of thing. They push buttons. John liked to push out two extra buttons just to see how far he could annoy people. And he'd admit to a lot of this, you know.
Was he like that with all of them?
Yeah, he was. When George leaves the band, when you see this thing now, this Get Back thing of Peter Jackson's, when George leaves the band, John is the one saying, like, if he's a festering sore, for God's sake, when he's having a cup of coffee in the canteen. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, he would always say, like, he had a song out called God on his first solo album, which, by the way, is a brilliant album. And it's like, you know, I don't believe in Beatles, you know, I just believe in me, Yoko and me, and that's reality. And then the big line, the dream is over, the 60s has ended, that's it, it's official, John Lennon says it. And it is true. That's just the way it was. There was terrible fights about the business in 69, and John wanted to bring in Alan Klein, who basically was a mafia guy who may or may not have been involved in the killing of Sam Cooke, the soul singer, years before. And Klein was looking after the Rolling Stones, and a lot of people say that Mick could have warned him. Mick did not warn John Lennon that this was the wrong guy to get. They did. George and Ringo went along, so the three of them admitted a few years later, we made a mistake here. Paul wanted his father-in-law. Who knows if Linda Eastman...
Who's his father-in-law?
He owned Kodak Film. Linda Eastman's father. And he made a fatal mistake, though. He was to come over and meet the Beatles, and they said, yeah, we'll meet him, sure. And he didn't come over. He sent his son over instead. And the other three said, that's disrespectful. To hell with him. We'll go with Alan
that
Klein.
Was the end
big
of that.
Mistake.
I wonder, would it have been the right choice to go with Linda's father?
Well, I mean, like, you know, there's a million questions you could ask yourself about the Beatles. I mean, I'll tell you, a funny thing is, in this very studio here, I about 12, 13 years ago, I interviewed Cynthia Lennon, and I was able to do my little rant about Yoko. Like, I've seen the details. There's enough books. He's a total chancer. And Cynthia said, well, you can say that. A roundabout way of saying, you saying it, nobody gives a damn. But if I, Cynthia Lennon, said exactly what you said, which is the truth, then I can tell you to be headline news. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're all eggshells. 40 years later, Ringo, George, up till he died 20 years ago, Paul, etc. They don't want, like, what's the point necessarily in saying a lot of this is Yoko's fault? Because nobody's going to gain anything out of it. And there was always the myth about, you know, Yoko broke up the Beatles. She kind of did. And I can't believe many people are not necessarily agreeing to that.
Listen, let's go back to this documentary. I mean, Jim, you haven't had the privilege of seeing it yet. I'm sure you're looking forward to it, right?
I can't wait. I saw the original one years ago. I think RTE showed it one Christmas, and it was fascinating. It's very hard. Like, you can't. It's not released. It's not really on YouTube. There's the odd kind of snippet, but this is like it's like the end of the story. Now, I think it's only one for fans. I think if you don't know the Beatles story and where Let It Be fits into the story, it's not going to really mean that much to you. But as a fan, I actually can't wait to see this, you know. Apparently Peter Jackson has used very little, if any, footage from the original one, which even it makes it more exciting to watch, you know.
Yeah, I see The Guardian said that it was like history coming to life. Dave, the original footage, which Jim is referring to there, part of the 1970 film Let It Be, that was shot by Michael Lindsay Hogg, and you spoke to him on your radio show last week. I think we have a short clip from that interview. Let's take a listen.
One of the things which I figured out pretty quickly was that the Beatles weren't actors. They were musicians. And so they had a completely different schedule than film actors would have. They weren't used to getting up early. They were used to getting up late, working late, et cetera, et cetera. So I liked what we got there, but I don't think they were particularly happy on that large stage, which may have exacerbated some of the issues between them.
Interesting that he saw it as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, funny enough, like as was mentioned, like the stuff that was in the original film isn't in this one, but it is from different angles. He uses different cameras. He didn't want to get in the way of Michael Lindsay-Hogg's one at all, which is quite good too, considering. But like, you know, he had so many hours to look at, and it's total fly on the wall stuff. To be honest, maybe, you know, it wouldn't appeal too much to non-Beatle fans, but it's just absolutely fascinating.
That man who you spoke to there, Michael Lindsay-Hogg, he's fascinating himself, isn't he?
Oh my God. I mean, like, first of all, he was the floor manager for Gay Byrne in the Late Late Show in the 60s. His mother is an incredibly famous actress with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. His father, now there's a bit about this as who his father is, and it's pretty obvious that it's definitely true. His father is not Mr. Lindsay-Hogg or Sir whatever Lindsay-Hogg. His father is Orson Welles. And it's well known, like Gloria Vanderbilt was telling Michael's mother, that's like definitely no question, and Michael's mother never actually said it to him. And a fascinating story, yeah.
I couldn't stand them, says Cahill in Dublin, of the Beatles.
Yeah,
see, well, there you go.
Absolutely, you're allowed not to stand them, for God's sake. You know, you're obviously a bit foolish, but I mean, you're allowed not
to
stand them.
And do you really believe that you have to be a super fan to
God,
enjoy
no.
this?
Oh God, no. This is the creative process. I mean, would I like to have seen them doing Revolver in the studio when they were all getting on and the songs were 10 times better? Yeah, some of the songs on Let It Be really aren't that great, but some of them are. But then it goes to the concert at the Top of the Roof and the greatest concert ever filmed.
Oh, tell us about that.
Well, that's the end of the thing. They're going to do it. Like, they were preparing to do a concert, a TV special and make an album. That's what this is about. And they weren't really interested in any of the things. Well, the album they kind of knew they had to do. And they had a deadline as well to get through. It really was difficult. And John, like Paul said, any songs? John, no, I haven't got any new songs. It's terrible stuff. Most bands will say, God, I can recognise that after a few years being in a band. But the thing is, they were going to do one on an ocean liner. They were going to do it in the pyramids. They were going to do this. They're mad ideas. And you can see all this happening in the thing. So let's just go up on the damn roof and do it. And half the time, the big difficulty was getting Billy Preston's keyboards up on the roof. Billy Preston was a fifth member that came in. And it was really kind of cool because he played keyboards. And you'll hear them really on Get Back and stuff like that. Get Back, like, is a good example of a song, the way it's formed. Like, you know, he's like, JoJo's Tucson, Arizona. And John goes, is Tucson in Arizona? And like, you know, George is trying to get his lyrics together. There's about five tracks from Abbey Road done. There's a bunch of tracks from their solo albums done as well. Interestingly, the opening track on the second John Lennon solo album, Give Me Some Truth, is done. And Paul has said recently, it just shows you what memory does. I can't remember doing any of that at all. And there it is, we can see it.
There it is. We can remember because we have the footage of it. How do you rate this album, Jim?
I would be honest, it's probably one of their weakest because I think that they were all the better songs they had. They were probably keeping them for their solo projects because they knew that the writing was kind of on the wall. Now, they came, the songs that they had on Abbey Road, the album afterwards, were much better, but I don't think anyone kind of, like, maybe Paul with Let It Be and stuff, but I don't think any of them were throwing their best work into the album Let It Be at all, no.
Jim, will you go to Garth Brooks?
Absolutely not.
Why?
And I wouldn't cross the road to see him, sorry.
So look, I'm looking at the queue for tickets now for Saturday the 17th of September. It's currently at 39,448. It is unbelievable. The demand for this man to go and see him is unbelievable. Dave Fanning, why?
I'm going for a pint with Jim. I wouldn't cross anything to see. I mean, seriously, what is wrong with and the other guy, Sheeran? I mean, for crying out loud, what's happened to music?
He's got two gigs. But look, I mean, all these people can't be wrong. They are. I would go because it's now become an event, hasn't it? It's become a cultural, historical crossover since 2014.
I'd point you out 20 other events worth going to besides that.
God, yeah, but can you understand why there's such an interest in him in this country?
No, absolutely not.
Ignorance is bliss.
It's the end of that conversation then. 40,000 people sitting there listening to us on the queue, hearing Dave Fanning and Jim saying, not going, not going, not going. Anyway, two less people in the queue if you are queuing for Garth Brooks. Yeah. Dave and Jim, thank you both very much.
Thanks, Claire.
Documentary series is out on Disney Plus today, isn't it?
Today, yeah. Today. Please don't ask me the time. I can't remember.
No, that's all right. It's on demand, so you can get it whenever you want. Right, you don't have to worry about that. Good, thank you both very much indeed. Let's take a break.
Thanks, Claire.